Mad SESMAT Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
This is indeed the Brad SESMAT Show. This is, of course, not Brad SESMAT. My name is Paula Bovin from AZ Central Sports, here with my friend and colleague Scott Bordeaux, AZ Central Sports. And this is, of course, Sports 360 AZ, and we're filling in for Brad. How you doing, Scott?
I'm good. I'm a little flustered today.
As usual. What is it this time, Scott?
As I get older, I realize with the internet how quickly the world passes you by.
Let me guess, you're talking about, what, llamas or dresses?
I'm at Gila River Arena yesterday for the state high school basketball championships, and I'm there for 7 or 8 hours. And, you know, and I'm busy writing, reporting, interviewing, tweeting, what we do.
Right.
And then I drive home. It's about an hour drive home with traffic and everything. I get home at 4 o'clock, 4:30, whatever. And I just sit, you know, go lay down for a minute and check my phone out. And I see a million tweets about some black and blue dress and then llamas on the loose in Sun City. What the heck happened yesterday?
It was a strange day in the digital age.
Explain the dress to me.
All right. So this dress, it's a picture of a dress that goes viral. And, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theorists going on. But one of the big theories is that when we see color, people sort of see things differently. And so some people saw the dress as gold and white, and some would see it as black and blue. Did you look at it? What did you see?
I did this morning after, because my daughter, who's 18, obviously, you know, said, did you look at the dress? I had no idea what she was talking about. I saw black and blue, but people said they were freaking out about this.
Oh, my God. I say white and gold every time I see it. It's white and gold.
Really?
Absolutely. It went crazy on the internet.
Crashed. And then the llamas were the greatest thing ever. And my mom lives in Sun City, but I guarantee you she didn't lift her head long enough from her Mahjong game to see llamas running outside her window. But that's great. I love that.
Well, and I love that it was Arizona was viral about something funny instead of, you know, debate about immigration or whatever. It was like a funny thing. But I love how there's a sort of communal spirit on the internet now when things like that happen. If it doesn't get nasty, yeah. Everybody's kind of bonding and sharing these funny jokes. I think it's hilarious. Well, I know some people were annoyed by
it. There was a comment in the early AZCentral.com story about the llama saying, it's unknown at this time where the llamas escaped from. Unknown? How many places could they have escaped from? It's not like there are 25 zoos within a mile of Sun City.
Well, and it's hilarious because I think somebody brought it to comfort somebody, like at a retirement home and they got loose. They got scared and they got loose and it was just, you know, crazy stuff. Llamas on the loose. Okay, we're not going to talk llamas this whole show.
Oh, come on, we could.
I promise. No. We're actually going to talk sports today. And the top stories brought to you by Honda Casino Resort. And let's start right away with the Suns, Scott. They beat Oklahoma City Thunder 117-113. Epic battle between the point guards, Russell Westbrook, Eric Bledsoe. This was, a little bit of a turning point for the Suns because they are this close to eliminating themselves from the postseason.
I don't think so at all.
You think it's done?
I think it's done if Kevin Durant comes back pretty quickly. Oklahoma State's a much better basketball team. To me, this is a game the Suns had to win because if you lose, you're 3.5 behind Oklahoma City. You're not going to catch them at this point. But does this mean they're going to catch Oklahoma City for that 8th playoff spot in the West? I don't think so unless Durant's out for another month, and then maybe. But, you know, these are the Suns. They play well against very good teams. Then they don't play well against some of the weaker teams in the West. They were at home. They took care of business. Westbrook and Bledsoe, great duel of two players who are very similar. Westbrook had a triple-double. Bledsoe, I think, one rebound away from the triple-double.
One assist away from the triple-double.
Great game for him. But do I think this is a turning point for the Suns? No, they are what they are. If Durant comes back in the next week, 10 days, I don't think Phoenix catches him.
Well, and I thought one of the good things really was Bledsoe and him being a leader. I think that was an important part of this whole deal. And I think we have sound on that.
When they feel that, you know, that's what the coaches are telling me. That's what my team are telling me. Step up, man. That's what I'm trying to do.
I think sometimes people misinterpret his sort of the way he projects himself and his demeanor is not maybe having a lot of passion about it. But I think now that he's in this role of being the guy, I think we're seeing more of the sort of leadership stuff.
Yeah, but he's not going to be a vocal leader. He said that. He just believes in leading by example, and that's fine. There are guys that lead by example that are great leaders. I mean, there's talk of Brandon Knight becoming more of the vocal leader on the Suns. But, you know, as long as Bledsoe plays great and cuts down on the turnovers, he doesn't have to be very vocal. There are other guys that can pick up that mantle. He has to develop into that consummate point guard that can get other guys involved while getting himself involved. He did that last night where Westbrook took so many shots. It really took everybody else away from the Oklahoma City offense.
Absolutely. Well, and I thought it was good. And I know P.J. Tucker, I think, mentioned that just winning a close game is a big thing for this team.
Man, if you've been around our team all year, we've taken so many losses. Probably got the most game winners on us this year. Losing by 1, 2, 3 points all year to actually get one of those games that really is really close and actually finish it and win it and to be such a big game is huge for us.
Well, there was nothing close, Scott, about the ASU-Utah game last night. Number 13, Utah pummels ASU. It was 83-41. 18 points in the – I think it was – no, 9 points.
ASU had 9 points in the first half.
9 points in the first half, which was one fewer than the rebounds Utah actually had in the first half. What do you make of this?
It's really disappointing. There was talk, although I think it was foolhardy before that game, that ASU, if they won 3 of their next 4, could be a bubble team for the NCAA tournament. Well, first of all, they had to win 3 of their next 4, and 2 of them were on the road at Utah and Colorado. First of all, Utah has destroyed teams at home all year in the Huntsman Center. I don't think they've lost a home game by fewer than 15 points all year. They're a tough matchup for ASU. But all that said, ASU has to give a better effort. Nobody's expecting the Sun Devils to win that game. But if you play competitively, it affirms all the progress you've made in the last 10 games where you were 7-3. The last 5 games, you're 4-1. When you get blown out, all the progress you've made just goes out the window.
That's a great point, because there was definitely sort of a turn about the opinion of ASU, that there was sort of hope for the future. I think that win over Arizona did a lot for Herb Sendek and sort of his perception of him. You're hearing the people kind of, the critics coming out again now. So I was really surprised at that effort, especially because I thought their game planning for U of A was so good and they looked so prepared. But I think this is just a horrible matchup for him, Utah.
And ASU has played during the Sendek era, ASU has played U of A pretty well at home.
Right.
They've been competitive. They won several games at home. They get up for that game more so than any game during the season. But they go on the road against good teams, and they just don't fare well. Look what they did in Tucson.
Right.
And now look what they do against Utah. It's just a different team. And part of it is youth. You have a freshman point guard in Trey Holder. Savon Goodman's a sophomore, his first year of major college ball. Eric Jacobson, his first year of really playing big-time college basketball in a major role. So you have a lot of guys that don't have a lot of experience. And then when you go into really hostile places against tough teams, this happens. Now, it shouldn't happen to the extent you get 9 points in the first half. Again, if ASU lost the game by 15 but showed up, fine.
Right.
And then try to beat Colorado, you got your split. But to lose this way, it just makes everybody say, all those other wins, who cares?
Right. Yeah. People have short memories.
I hate to say it, but people have short memories.
This is the nature of sports in 2015. All right, well, Utah, which looked so good last night, I'm really looking forward to their matchup with Arizona this weekend. The Wildcats coming off an 82-54 victory over Colorado. Wasn't a perfect game for the Wildcats, but they're getting it done. Do you see them improving during the course of this season?
It all depends on Caleb Tarzewski, the big guy. I mean, they're going to get – T.J. McConnell's going to give them – I guess Tarzewski and Stanley Johnson, the two guys that you wonder about. There are games where Stanley Johnson looks like a top-5 pick in the NBA draft, but then there are games he just doesn't show up. And, again, that's somewhat typical of a freshman, but he's supposed to be the best or the most talented player on that roster. He has to be a big-time player down the stretch if they're going to get to the Final Four, and the Tarzewski has to show up. He has been a non-factor way too much of the season for a guy who was supposed to take that next step. Now, he's played better the last 2 weeks, and I guess he played well yesterday, but he has to be that guy that gives them 12, 14 points, 10 rebounds every single night if they want to go far.
Well, especially in the postseason, you're right, Scott. I mean, he's got to step up his level of play, be consistent if they want to get anything done. And, you're right, though. He had some great moments last night, including a pretty impressive dunk.
Out top, around a pick from Zeus. Right elbow, nothing inside. Out to York, pump fake the three. Drives the lane, his runner, dish off. Tarzewski, flush two!
You know, there's one problem with that U of A team. That their three-point shooting is not great.
Right.
And it's tough to go far in the tournament if you don't have a bunch of three-point shooters, because you know what defenses are going to do. They're going to sag off and force U of A to try to beat them at the three-point line. And other than Gabe York, do they have a great three-point shooter?
No.
McConnell is a reluctant shooter. Johnson isn't a great three-point shooter. Their big guys obviously aren't. It amazes me how well Sean Miller's been able to recruit in so many different areas, but he has yet to get that real great spot-up shooter that can play off all the other guys.
Like the ones we used to see at U of A. I mean, that was their staple.
You know, Steve Kerr.
Salim Stoudemire. Right. I mean, they just had this great long string of guys like that. So, yeah, that was pretty surprising. Well, you know, we see when we're watching Arizona sometimes, Sean Miller looks like he's about to explode, whether it's officiating or whatever. But he has restraint. Yesterday, Vanderbilt coach Kevin Stallings did not, and it was really interesting. I think it was that Wade Baldwin was his player, and cameras caught him saying, pretty much, I'm going to
kill you. Yes.
He's apologized for. Do we all move on for that, or do you wonder, is there something deeper that they got to kind of keep an eye on this? You know, this is a college of sweater vests. I think of Vanderbilt, I think of these prim and proper people. So what do you think?
I think it depends on whether this was the first incident or not. If this is the first incident where he said something like that to a player in the heat of a moment, and he did apologize immediately afterwards, if he apologized to the players, you let it go. Guy lost his temper. It happens. He apologized. But if there is a series of incidents, then Vanderbilt has to address it more, you know, whether it's suspension or a fine. But if it's the first one, you know, we all lose our temper sometimes.
Sure.
We all say things we like to have back. And again, he apologized immediately. If that's it, let it go. Now, I would, if I'm Vanderbilt's administration, say to him, all right, if there's a second incident like this, then you're going to be suspended or fined. Just know you're on the clock right now.
Right.
You had your one get out of free jail card. This is it.
Well, and this to me is the real positive about this. You know, everything's on television, the scrutiny now, the cameras pick it up, even in practices, because other coaches are learning, look what will happen if you get caught on the camera.
Paul, all the stuff we see in the football sidelines and NBA sidelines, that it's been going on for 40, 50 years. We just didn't see it 25, 30 years ago because there weren't everybody with their cell phone holding, you know, cameras that recording every moment, or 40 cameras at every football game or basketball game. We just see more and hear more than we ever did.
How would Frank Cush do in this era?
Oh, he wouldn't. all those, Woody Hayes, Frank Cush, all those guys, I mean, they wouldn't coach for long right now because there'd be a drumbeat to get them out because of a physical or not physical, verbal abuse of players.
It's unbelievable. I know that Kevin Stallings did address this, I think, after the game. I apologize. That was actually during the game.
I was going to say, if that was his post-game apology, then Vanderbilt's got an issue.
Then there was a problem,
That was the that reminded me of the old Tommy Lasorda rant and the who was the Cubs manager? The great was it Lee Elia? His
oh
rant?
Sure, yeah.
You know, they're somewhere on the internet where you can just
you
Google
can
Tommy Lasorda
those.
Rant and you'll hear a bunch of beeps.
Yeah, people survive, but like you said, it's whether it's a pattern.
Yeah,
there's different standards right now in this.
I don't begrudge a guy losing a temper if he hasn't done it before and if he's apologized.
Right.
I've done it. You've done it. We've all done it.
Yeah, I've never said I'm going to bleep and kill my kids. So I'll let you know that.
You
one.
Haven't?
No. Oh, you have. Excuse
no,
me.
No, I haven't. Because somebody's listening, they'll say, oh, abuse, they'll call CPS on me.
Yeah, there you go. All right, don't call CPS
on
him, by the way.
I'm a good father.
He's a good guy.
Just don't ask my kids.
Scott Bordeaux, AZ Central Sports. Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. We are filling in for Brad Sesmat. We have a great show coming up. We have Bill Goodykoons, who is our colleague at AZ Central, talking of movies, what to see. I saw a great one I want to talk about in a little bit. And my good friend, Frank Burleson on basketball. No one is more tapped into the college game than this guy. So I look forward to talking with him here on Brad Sesmat Show, Sports 360 AZ.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360 AZ.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports 360 AZ. You can, of course, catch it streaming live. I think you are already. But if you're not and somebody's telling you about this, it is on AZ Central Sports. Go to AZ Central Sports and you can find a link to it. We are filling in for Brad, who is not here today. I'm Paula Bovin with my colleague Scott Bordeaux, who I know, Scott, because every time I look, you're at some high school game. How's the tournament been this year? I mean, as far as sort of the competition and storylines and...
Can I just go off topic for a second?
Of course.
I'm looking at a monitor here. That is, North Dakota has the ugliest green uniforms the women's basketball team I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's not good.
And who dressed them?
Well, we're going to get into uniforms in a minute, but it's not about school colors or anything else. It's just about catching somebody's attention.
So. The high school basketball, well, they're all going on. They end Monday with Division I and II championships at Gila River Arena. I still have trouble not saying jobbing.com.
I know.
But, yeah, they're all over the valley. At Grand Canyon today is Division I and II girls basketball. I even lose track. There's just so many. 354 games in 2 weeks at four different venues. So,
And I asked this as someone who had someone who played, my son played high school varsity basketball, and I could never figure out who got in the tournament. Like, why, you know?
It's
are you okay with the system, or?
It's top 24 teams in each in each division, and it just qualifies based on how you do in the regular season, how you do in the super sectionals. I don't think there's major issues with how they do basketball. I mean, I have some quibbles, but I'm okay with it.
I think the matchups tomorrow on the D1 boys, it's Corona and Chaparral and Desert Vista and
Mountain View.
What do you think of these two matchups?
Well, let's get up to Corona Chaparral first. I mean, if you haven't seen Corona play, we've written a lot, and there's been a lot of talk about Marvin Bagley, the 6 foot, I think he's 6 foot 11 now, freshman at Corona, who's the grandson of Jumpin' Joe Caldwell, the ASU legend. He's already ranked 8th nationally among recruits. This includes seniors in high school. He's a freshman. If you haven't seen him, I think they're playing at Grand Canyon on Saturday. I'm not sure. I think the time might be 6 or 7:45. Go out and see this kid. Corona also has a sophomore guard, Alex Barcelo. Right. He's been offered by U of A, offered by Virginia. He'll be offered by almost every major college by the time he's done. Dane Kuyper is a kid going to New Mexico. They've won 3 straight state titles going for a 4th. That hasn't been done since 58 to 61.
Wow.
Yeah, nothing in Chaparral, but they'll beat Chaparral. Corona's just too good. The more intriguing game to me is Desert Vista Mountain View, because Desert Vista is this very athletic team. Guys run up and down the court. They got a kid, Brandon Clark, who's 6'8", can jump through the gym. But Mountain View is coached by Gary Ernst, who has won eight state championships. And they execute better in the half-court set than almost any high school team you'll ever see. I counted one possession in their quarterfinal game. They threw 14 passes before getting a backdoor layup. And it's just, they don't have great athletes, don't have, you know, you look at them and go, I'm not sure there's a D1 player in that entire roster yet. Here they are in the semis. It's a really interesting clash of styles in that game, and I think that's what makes that game so intriguing.
Well, and I think it's so hard these days, especially guys coming through the club programs or whatever, not even that necessarily, but kids in general, to get them to buy into a system like that and not the me first mentality.
Well, that's what really impressed me about Corona. I was thinking about this yesterday. You have a kid from Bagley who's, again, top 10 nationally, a kid like Barcelo, who's already being offered by U of A and other schools, and a kid like Kuyper's D1, and yet they play really well together in a team as a team. And I think that's a credit to Sam Duane Jr., because when you get guys that good, 15, 16 years old, there can be egos.
Right.
And they've been told by their AAU coach and club coaches, you're the man, and we're going to feed you the ball, and this and that. And when they get to their high school team, sometimes things happen. But that Corona team plays so unselfishly, it's a credit to their coach. And the same with Mountain View. They don't have the same quality players, but I don't know of any coach in the state that gets more with less than Gary Ernst. Again, I watched the Mountain View team, and I'm thinking, I'm not sure there's a D2 player in that roster right now, and yet all they do is win every year.
You've been in the state longer than I have. I remember talking to a college coach probably 15 years ago who sort of lukewarm about the talent level in the state, and I know it kind of goes up and down, but where do you think the state is now as far as high school basketball boys talent?
It's getting better. It's not what football is. Right now, Arizona is one of the best producers in the country in terms of D1 football.
Really?
So you see that every year. I think I counted the numbers 3 years ago or 2 years ago. Arizona had as many D1, major D1 recruits as Florida or Texas that year. May have been Texas. Football recruiting has just gone gangbusters. You see major college coaches here every year. The basketball recruiting isn't quite as pronounced. You don't have as many great D1 players, but it's getting better. You know, the population expansion, more schools, better coaching, play year-round, the club programs. So you're going to see more and more D1 recruits coming out of Arizona. You're probably, I think, 3 to 5 years away from where you can say Arizona is a really fertile ground for big-time college programs.
It's so interesting. And I think what happens, like with football, is you start getting some really high-level coaching, which is part of the issue. And is that sort of what happens with basketball, too? Is that what sort of makes the difference? Or is it just sort of the luck of the draw that talented, athletic, kids are born?
I think a lot of it has to do with growth.
Right.
I mean, how many schools have opened here?
That's
how many
true.
People
That's a great
transplant,
point.
From move here from Michigan? I think Mountain Point, and this is a football example, Tracy Smith's kid, the ASU baseball coach, he moved here to take the ASU job. His son is a great quarterback, might be the best quarterback in the state next year, and is rolling a Mountain Point. So you see all these families moving from the Midwest, where it's 27 feet of snow on the ground, in the east, and they come out here and you get more schools and bigger growth, you just commit more athletes, and this is what happens.
All right, I have to ask you this, and I know this will be an interesting question for you, but
all right.
I used to, you know, I worked in California for many years, and I saw what happened in the last 5 years there. They had all kinds of problems with kids transferring, so now they opened it up. You can pretty much play wherever you want.
Well,
and tell me why you hate it, because wouldn't that solve some of the problems here?
No, it would just make it wouldn't solve any of the problems. It would just exacerbate the problems because you already have the richer schools with the greater facilities winning all the state championships. So we did that, Paul. You were part of this project we did 2 years ago. Poor schools have very little chance of winning championships in club sports and sports like football because of numbers. If you open up where kids can transfer anywhere, any kid that's at a poorer school is just going to say, I'm going to go to some other school where we have a better chance of winning a state championship and a better chance of being noticed by college recruiters. You're going to kill the poor schools if you open that up. I want them to restrict transfers. And there's a rule before the legislative council that'll meet next Friday that if you transfer to a school within 50 miles in the valley, you are ineligible to play for a year unless you can prove the move wasn't made for athletic reasons.
Tricky sometimes, isn't it?
No, it's not tricky. If you have to prove it.
Right.
All right, look, my family moved. Here's the home address. My father got a job at this company. Yeah, now we have to be at this school. All right, then the appeal is accepted and you can transfer. But so many of these kids are transferring purely for athletic reasons.
Right.
And that's what the AIA is trying to stop, and I applaud them for that. I still believe there's some value in playing with the team and the kids you grew up with. That may be naive and the old man on his lawn, but I still think there's value in that.
I don't know. I've talked to someone in California, and they told me what's happened is it hasn't been this crazy transfer amount as people thought because people have found that they now have opportunities at some of the schools that maybe they're getting to play more or whatever.
The transfer rule here has been so it just doesn't work.
Right.
That kids have been transferring left and right anyway.
Right.
Rarely is a transfer, you know, is a kid not allowed to play immediately after he transfers. So, but how many kids do you see transferring to poorer schools?
Right. Yeah.
Is COFA going to get a lot of transfers? Is Cortez going to get a lot of football transfers? No, but they may lose more kids if you open up their transfer room and let anybody go where they want.
Well, I really want to sort of investigate deeper what's happened at California and why it's worked. I mean, there's a short period of time you can't play, but I think it's only like 6 weeks or something.
But when you talk to people, are you talking to representatives of the more affluent schools there and the schools that are traditionally really good athletic programs? Because they'll benefit from transfers. It's the schools that aren't traditionally powerful and are poorer schools that will really be hurt by having no transfer rule. And so I guess I'd ask, who are you talking to?
I talked to a writer at the LA Times, Eric Sondheimer, who's one of the local writers. But you know what? Also, we're going to talk to Frank Burleson. I mentioned him a while ago, who's going to be on in our next segment. And we'll see, because Frank covers a lot of basketball there. And we'll have to see if it's been a big issue, because it's...
I would just be afraid it would open up the box to where every kid that's at a program that is going to win two games that year, and you're the best player at that program, you're going to say, no college coach is coming to see me. We're going to win two games, so I'm going to transfer the program down the street.
Right.
And why wouldn't that just happen in mass?
I guess. I see so many stories in the paper, and there seems to be such debate with the AIA of, you know, was it really a true move? Was it not? It seems inconsistent with the rulings a little bit.
There's an easy way to solve this. Stay at the school you enrolled as a freshman. I have no problem with open enrollment. My daughter was an open enrollee at Corona del Sol. We live in the Dobson district, but all her friends from church were at Corona. She wanted to go there. We said, fine. But once you go to school, just stay there. If you're good enough, the college coach will find you. It's the era of the we have this thing called the internet, Paula.
Llamas and dresses.
Where you can get your clips and send your clips to any college coach and do. If you're good enough, they will find you. You don't have to go to, you know, Saguaro, Chaparral, Hamilton, Chandler, Mountain Point, any of the powerful programs in the state. Stay where you are.
Well, and that's interesting too, and not in football so much, but you're finding in some situations the club programs are almost more powerful in helping kids get into colleges, right? As far as where the coaches are watching them in these tournaments in Long Beach things like that.
My daughter's a soccer player. She just finished her senior season at Corona. You don't get noticed by the high school you play for. You get noticed by the how elite club program you play for. And that's where college coaches go, because it's easier to go to a tournament where there are 30 club teams and scout there than going to one high school game.
Right, right.
So they go to these club tournaments and they see all these girls playing against other elite club members, and that's how they recruit.
Did you struggle with that?
Because, you know, Emily, my daughter was really, she was really wise about it for a teenager. She said she wasn't even as a sophomore or junior. She said, I'm not sure I want to play in college, and I don't want to devote my life to an elite club program where that's the number one thing in your life. We said, you know what? If you're happy and healthy doing what you're doing, That's fine. And she decided not to play in college. She had some D2 offers, and we're fine with that. So, you know, sometimes parents need to chase that for scholarship reasons. I understand that. But I think sometimes you just got to listen to your kid. If they really don't want to just give up their lives for that, I'm fine with that.
Well, and I've seen a lot of parents who have unrealistic expectations about what their kids can do. I think that's one of the biggest problems in high school sports today. And I know a lot of coaches, they deal with that. And the parent issue is one of the things that bothers them more than anything. But it surprised me how many parents sort of looked at their kid, and I don't know if they were living vicariously through them. I thought that was a real problem.
Well, part of it is how expensive a college education is right now. So you're desperately trying to get that scholarship. But you're right. I mean, look, there's a kid that's going to be playing, I think it's for Desert Ridge next year. He's on his fourth high school. I think he'll be their quarterback, fourth high school in 4 years.
Wow.
Be trying to find the best situation. I mean,
sure.
That's ridiculous.
And right.
Look, if you're a parent, talk to your kid. Sometimes we make decisions for them when they're playing high school sports. Sit down and listen to what they say they want to do. Sometimes you'll be surprised.
Yeah, you will, right. I know they think they know what's best for their kid, but their kid has other opinions.
Yeah.
Because the expectations now in sports, and we're going to move on here in a second, the expectation now in sports, it's sort of year-round, many sports. You don't play multiple sports. Kids get burnt out really quickly.
And one last thing, and if you're trying to force your kid to play beyond the level they want to, whether it's an elite club team or play college sports and they don't want to, they're going to rebel at some point.
Absolutely.
And hate playing.
Right.
You don't ever want that to happen.
No, not at all. All right. The words of wisdom from Scott Bordeaux. I'm Paula Bovin. We are filling in for Brad Sussmat here on the Brad Sussmat Show. Of course, that's what it's called. Sports 360 AZ. My good friend, Mr. Basketball, Frank Burleson, is going to be joining us here in a minute on the Brad Sussmat Show. Welcome back, Brad Sussmat Show, here on Sports 360 AZ. I am not, of course, Brad Sussmat. I am Paula Bovin of the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, with my partner in crime, Scott Bordeaux, Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports as well. And one of my favorite people, one of my best friends for years, but...
Thank you.
Actually, I was talking about Frank.
Oh, dang.
You're sort of second or third there, Scott. But we're not inviting him on because he's my friend, because that would just be awkward. We're inviting him because he knows a lot about basketball. He is Frank Burleson. He is a member of the Hall of Fame. He runs Burleson on Basketball Scouting Service, and this is basically NBA college coaches subscribe to this. And Frank goes all over the country scouting talent. Check out his website, Burleson on basketball.com. Frank, how you doing?
Pretty good, Paul. How's it going? How's the family?
The family is good. Yep, they're both.
Well, I keep up with Jessie more than I do the other members of family because she's always tweeting, you know?
She is, yeah, she's a tweeting freak and has her father's sarcastic wit, I guess you could say.
Oh, yeah.
Frank,
hopefully she's got her. Hopefully she has her mother's innate talent, too.
Yeah, well, thanks. I think so. I think she's beyond my talent right now. She's a very good writer. But we want to talk about you, and we want to talk about college basketball. But, Frank, before you came on, Scott and I were debating something. I was telling him that I thought the state should just sort of allow open enrollment with these, you know, athletes in town because there's just been so many issues with the AIA here. And if I remember correctly, didn't California recently changed the rules about open enrollment? And how
well,
is it?
They have, well, I mean, it's kind of complicated. And again, I don't know all the rules
right.
within Arizona, guys. But California, basically, when you're a ninth grader, you could go to any, when you're about ready to be a ninth grader, in theory, you could go to any high school in the state of California you wanted to, as long as your home school district and the district that you're going to, you know, your home school district will sign off on you leaving, and the new district will say, okay, we'll take an out-of-district student, perhaps at the cost of another student who lives in town and wants to go there. But once you've enrolled at the school, that becomes your home school. And now when you leave in the state of California, if you want to transfer to another high school, you have one opportunity to transfer to another high school for athletics and be eligible, but you have to sit out 30 days. Now, this is without moving. So in theory, you could, if somebody wanted to give you a ride 150 miles round trip, you could do that. But you'd have to sit out the 30 days now. And you could do that one time. Now, you don't have to sit out the 30 days if you make a verified move. And it's just not you moving in with some friends. It's
right.
The whole family unit moving. And if you own a house, you have to rent it out. If you, if you're renting a house, you have to, you know, break the lease and leave. So it's a little complicated. I mean, and then again, there's the guys who do it and give fake addresses and
sure.
athletes who do it and stuff like that. But again, that's basically it in a nutshell.
Has it, I mean, especially with the 30-day thing, has it worked out okay, or has this been a sort of widespread transfer?
I mean, it happens a lot. Football, I don't really deal with much, but I know there was a ton of guys who became eligible, you know, on October 1st. So basically they set out 30 days, so probably four games they missed, and then they're eligible. Now, you know, some parents, some kids think it's worth it if you're going to a program, you know, where it's such an advantage to be there in terms of exposure, either competition, either coaching, or exposure to college coaches, that they say, hey, it's worth, you know, if we don't want to move, it's still worth missing a month of the season just because of the advantages of going to that school. And, you know, the thing is, when you think about, and you can see the lure, everybody says, well, it's just about exposure. Go, yeah, I mean, when a parent, I mean, you guys are doing it with Jesse, what a college education costs today and what it's going to cost 4, 5, 6, 7 years from now when the 8th and 9th graders that are moving around or 7th graders that are moving around or kids who are repeating or parents who are, you know, having their kids repeat 6th grades to get more athletically advanced, then you know that, you know, you think of what a college education is going to cost, and you understand the motive for a lot of these, this movement.
Here, my problem with Frank and Scott Bordeaux is that, you know, Paul and I did a series a couple years ago about how money influences high school sports so much these days. And the problem with having such an open transfer rule, in my mind, is you're never going to get kids transferring to poorer programs. And programs that are struggling, you're going to get kids transferring away from those programs, which is just going to widen the gap between the affluent schools and the schools that don't have a lot of resources. And that's my whole problem with the transfer rule. Is that happening in California?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's the haves. It's definitely a case of the haves and the have-nots. I mean, when you think about, for example, what they have in Southern California, now the CIF Southern Section,
right,
which is about 550 schools or close to 600 schools, they created this open division as of last year. And, you know, full disclosure, I'm on the selection committee. But what they do is basically they pick the 16 best teams regardless of what, you know, 11 divisions you're in, and they take those 16 teams. And they create kind of the super, conference of death or whatever. I mean,
right,
it's basically 16 of, say, the 18 best teams of the state are playing in this one playoff thing, which is now into the semifinals. And so it's really, really diluted all the other divisions.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be divisions where, you know, third and fourth place teams from certain leagues are going to win it because it's so diluted. And again, it is what it is, you know. I mean, it's nothing that's going to change, and a lot of that has to do with the principals and stuff getting together and say, hey, all these schools want to, you know, for want of a better word, cheat and recruit or have all these resources, like the Catholic schools out here, this massive resources where every football coach in the Trinity League with the Modern Days and the Servites, et cetera, St. John Bosco's, you know, all those coaches are making $100,000 to $150,000. They don't teach. They've got incredible budgets. They give all these tuition stipends. If all those schools are going to have those kind of resources and have players from outside of their attendances, we'll let them compete against one another for championships and
right,
kind of free up all the other divisions for the teams that are the programs that are the more traditional in nature in terms of just local kids and kids stay 4 years and things like that.
Frank, you know, obviously you evaluate a lot of talent, and I'm really curious your opinions when they were in high school of the two point guards here in Arizona, Trey Holder with ASU, Stanley Johnson, obviously with Arizona. What did you think of those guys then, and if you had a chance to watch much of them now, have you seen a lot of growth?
You know, Stanley, I've seen a bunch on TV. ASU, I've seen a little bit. You know, Trey Holder, I've seen both these kids since kids. You know, these
sure,
players since they were, you know, 7th or 8th grade. Trey Holder was always a guy who was a very, very good scorer. And the question was always going to be, okay, you know, is he going to become a quote-unquote true point guard? And obviously he's doing a good job of that while still scoring for ASU. Stanley, I mean, was just always so, so good. And he was one of these guys that when he was 8th grade, he was 6'3", 220. So he was always so physically more stronger and physically dominant for the kids of his age group. Then you wonder, okay, is he going to get more skilled? Is he going to become a good shooter? And certainly he's done all those things, and certainly, you know, having the kind of freshman season that everybody anticipated. And also, I guess, unfortunately, for the wishful thinking among the Arizona set in Tucson, you know, a very, very short Arizona career, too, because he's long gone. You'll hear him declaring for the draft probably 10 to 15 minutes after their last loss this season.
Frank, I know you're based in California, but there are a couple kids here in Arizona I wanted to see if you've just seen the club circuit.
Seen them all, Scott.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. Marvin Bagley.
Terrific.
Number one. I mean, impressions of him.
Good. I saw him, you know, when he was in sixth grade and stuff, and a little stuff here a little bit. And it's always, you always wonder when you're seeing kids in fifth and sixth grade, you know, the physical dominance is always kind of tough because they can dominate 5'7" kids of their size. But then I had a chance in October at the USA Basketball, had a bunch of the best 9th and 10th graders there for 2 days. So I watched him play against ostensibly all the other really good class of 2018 kids, and he was terrific there. I mean, and I saw him in the Hoop Hall in Springfield, Massachusetts last month with Corona del Sol, and he was very, very good. You know, I'm always nebulous. It's always kind of, you know, I shy away from, oh, he's the best freshman in the country, because let's face it, you know, I've seen a lot of the best freshmen, but I haven't seen everybody. But let's all just say this. He's as good a freshman as I've seen anywhere this country this season. Certainly if he, you know, if he keeps working hard and he stays focused and, you know, he looks at the big picture and doesn't try to rush too much in terms of, you know, how quickly he wants to be good and just becomes through natural maturation and stuff. You know, he's going to be a terrific, terrific player, certainly. You know, assuming he stays in Arizona, doesn't go to a prep school or something, which is always a possibility in these days. But, I mean, he's, you know, with the Mike Bibbys and the Sean Elliotts or any other player that's come out of Arizona, Lafayette Lever, I mean, he has a chance to be right there, certainly.
I wrote earlier this year, I think he has a chance to be the best recruit ever to come out of Arizona. Given how many...
Now, again, some guys like, you know, Bibby was high profile. Right. Sean Elliott wasn't quite as high profile as some of the guys in his class, but he obviously evolved into a great, great player under Lute Olson and a terrific NBA player. But again, at this stage of his career, he's certainly right there with... where Mike Bibby was, for example, as a high school freshman. Bibby, if you guys remember, was just a terrific high school freshman.
He's Frank Burleson, USA Basketball Hall of Fame member, also runs a free website, burlesononbasketball.com. And does scouting for NBA teams and college programs. And I always say this when I have Frank on, but it's just so fun to be around him because his phone is constantly ringing with the Bill Selfs of the world saying, hey, what'd you think of this guy? And I went to his wedding and there's, you know, Pac-12 coaches all around there. So this guy's very connected. We talked about Marvin Bagley. Is there any other high school guys that have jumped out at you when you're around the country that have caught your attention?
Paul and Scott, you talked about the state of Arizona. I mean, it's in terms of freshmen and sophomores and a few juniors, it's as good as it's ever been. I mean, there are three, Alex Barcelo from Corona del Sol, Marcus Howard, who's very good, and then the other kid who came from Hawaii. The other guard.
You're talking about Marcus Shaver from St. Mary's?
Marcus, yes, there you go. Way to go, Scott. My mind's blanking. But those are three of the best.
Yeah.
Three of the best 10 class of 2017 point guard classes, point guards in the country. I mean, they're very, very good. Marcus Howard's good. He was at the USA basketball thing, too. And I love Barcelo.
I do, too.
But I love Barcelo is really, really good. And to have both he and Bagley, and, you know, with Dwayne Kuiper, I mean, to have Barcelo and Bagley together for if they stick together, and I'm not trying to suggest stuff that anything, but if they happen to stick together and they play two more seasons together, they're going to do terrific things. Not only win state titles, but in all these national events they play, and they're going to be very, very difficult to beat.
It's interesting, Frank. We were talking about the explosion of basketball here. I mean, and I think I told Paula, I think in 3 to 5 years you'll see Arizona in basketball be what it's like in football now, where you're going to see a bevy of big-time recruits every year, just because the sport is growing, population is growing. You know, we haven't had this kind of talent in a lot, and it's just going to get better in Arizona.
Yeah, you know, the parallel I would give you guys is, remember what that 5 or 6 year stretch where Seattle just turned out so many guys, be it John Brockman, be it Spencer Hawes, Martell Webster, Brandon Roy, you know, Jamal Crawford was an L.A. kid who went up to Seattle for his last 2 years. But, I mean, that's parallel. And again, the people moving into the city, to the Phoenix, greater Phoenix area, and the great travel type programs that exist in the state in terms of guys can play, you know, against the best players in this, not only within the state on a, you know, almost a daily basis in the spring and summer, but then also play as a group and go and play, you know, anywhere in the country. So all those things have kind of contributed to, you know, Phoenix and the greater Phoenix area and throughout the state, really not just Phoenix, but becoming, you know, one of the really rising hotbeds of high school basketball.
He is Frank Burleson. Please check out his website. It's free, burlesononbasketball.com. The guy knows more than anyone I know. And Frank, I can clearly you've been neglecting your dog, so you need to go take care of your dog. And thank you for coming on today.
The two sisters, the Australian minis, they're a little mad that Dad's got the door shut. So.
Oh, the nerve. Thanks, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Take care, guys.
All right, that's Frank Burleson. I'm Paula Bovin. That is Scott Bordeaux to my right. Because, yeah, we're on. See,
we
you can see us. So
that's
we're
right.
On. I can say that now. I used to say that on radio all the time. It made no sense. We are filling in for Brad Sesemat today here on Sports 360 AZ. And coming up, we're going to talk movies, Oscars with Bill Kuntz, our colleague at AZ Central. Now that is an intro,
see,
Scott Bordeaux.
I don't want music like that when I walk into an arena to cover a game. Nobody does that for me.
No. We'll talk to some people. Maybe we can get you,
yeah,
you know.
I'm sure the AIA would
Scott
love
Bordeaux
to.
Is, I'm sure they would. All right. That is Scott Bordeaux. I'm Paula Bovin. We work for the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, and, of course, our next guest. It's Goody at the Movies. Bill Goody Kuntz does as well. Bill, how you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, before we move into some of the movies I want to ask you about, I just saw McFarland, USA. I love that movie. I thought it had so much heart. What did you think of it?
I liked it a lot. I read in my review, if you try to describe it to somebody, it sounds insufferable. And the things that are good about it are actually the things that sound bad about it. I mean, it's cliched.
Right.
It's just a big old cliche. And just because it's based on real life, by the way, doesn't mean it can't still be a cliche. But it's and Kevin Costner can himself be kind of insufferable, but I thought he was really good in it. He's actually kind of aged into playing, kind of cooler people. I talked to him, and he was interesting because he's gone from playing the athlete to playing the coach or the general manager or whatever.
Right.
The office guy. And he also said, I've made about 50 movies and only, I think, five of them are sports movies. That's all anybody talks to me about. I wanted to say, yeah, that's because those are the only ones that are any good.
All right, Bill, I've got to ask you about the Oscars before we get to this week's releases. And I'm an Oscars buff. I watch the whole show, 3.5-4 hours, however long it is. But I do have a question. I understand why they reserve Best Actress, Best Actor, and Best Picture and Director to like the last hour. Because they want to keep viewers. Couldn't you spread those out a little bit more so you have a little bit more interest in the middle 2 hours of the show when it's all costume design and art direction?
Of course you could, but then people would turn away.
But you still have Best Picture, maybe Best Actor or something like the last half hour.
Well, I can tell you that my deadline was 10:02 p.m.
And oh, dear.
As you guys know, it's fairly specific, this sort of thing. And so I'm getting there, and all that's left is like Best Picture, and I think it's got to be Birdman. The way things are going, it's going to be Birdman. So I actually wrote it as if it were Birdman, but I'm ready to change it if I need to,
Right.
And, just like you would at a game on deadline or something like that. And so, I'm going to make it. All that's left is Best Picture. And then Neil Patrick Harris, who I like as a general thing, decides he's going to complete that ridiculous magic trick.
Oh, it was horrible.
That was so dumb,
I was like, no, you're already a half hour over. I was like, please don't do this. And, even the audience, you could tell they're just kind of like, ugh. And the payoff was just not worth the buildup. But, I don't know why they don't do it that way. I mean, why? I know why they do it. But particularly this year, because most of those races were a lock. You knew who was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that you didn't were actor, director, and Beth Fisher. And, of course, those are the three that they saved to the last.
What were your couple of your favorite moments from the show?
When they said goodbye.
Ouch!
And your story was done.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought the director for Birdman, I liked his speech. I thought that was pretty good. I liked the things that I guess some people didn't like, which I thought that Patricia Arquette, I like it when she spoke out.
Me too. I do.
Women. But then immediately it becomes parsed for all the hidden meaning. And, but why didn't she say it about this group or that group? And it's like, there's, you don't have to be all-inclusive every time. I mean, I let her say what she said, and then, you know, we can figure something else out. But that always happens. That kind of bugs.
All right, one last question. I'm sorry, Bill, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
One last question for me about the Oscars. And do you think the Academy would ever go really irreverent and go after Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and do that, like they did the Golden Globes?
Yeah, I mean, the ratings are down 14% over last year. I mean, wow. They might ask you to if they, if that's, you know, I think they'll try anything. I mean, they tried James Franco and Anne Hathaway, and that didn't, you know, he didn't really hold up his end. I don't know. Before we get to movies, is breaking me. I just ended up writing something about this. I guess Leonard Nimoy died.
Yeah.
Mr. Spock.
Yeah, and he was a guy people sort of, you know, obviously pigeonholed him as Spock, but he was a guy who had a range, right, of other work that he did that was well-respected.
Yeah, I mean, he directed Three Men and a Baby, the movie with...
I forgot about that, that's
with,
right.
With Ted Danson, and he wrote a couple of those Star Trek movies, and he and William Shatner put out those dreadful records in the 60s that you can tell me you still go
yes.
back
to. Oh, I got to get one of those.
they're not together. They're different solo albums. And they're just horrible. They're like this spoken word thing. But yeah, and he said, you know, this is the thing I just read. He was famously ambivalent about playing Spock. I mean, he liked it fine, but he didn't want to be Mr. Spock. Star Trek only lasted 3 seasons.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you would think that it never went off. But he, and he's still playing Spock in 2013. But he, thanks to the movies. But his autobiographies, the first one was titled I Am Not Spock, and the second was titled I Am Spock. So, evidently at some point he came to terms with it.
Yeah, that it wasn't such a bad thing.
Well,
maybe.
I'm sure the paychecks were pretty nice.
I wish that I had something like that to complain about that paid.
Exactly.
It's like, just to try it, you know? I think I could be a good rich person.
I'm sure. Well, do you have anything to complain about? Some of the movies that you saw, talk to us about what's opened and what you thought about them.
This week, the one, and I'm serious, you got to go see this, and it's only a Camel View, but it's a movie called What We Do in the Shadows, and it's a comedy horror movie about vampires, and it's in New Zealand, which I know it doesn't sound like.
You just turned me off already, Goody.
I know. But it's the same guys, a lot of the same team that made Flight of the Conchords, the HBO special series about the New Zealand musicians, and it is hilarious. To do this well, you've really gotta kind of love the thing that you're spoofing, you know, and they clearly do. I honestly laughed out loud about 20 times. It's just so good, and it is actually kind of gory and scary. I mean, there are these things like, I mean, and maybe it's just me, but a couple of the vampires get in this fight in this alley, and they're like pushing each other. And then to, like, further continue their fight, they, like, turn into bats, and they flap in the air, and they continue fighting. And a couple of the other vampires are like, ooh, ooh, bat fight. it just cracked me up.
See, what was the comedy that was made about vampires a few years ago? A spoof of the vampire. My son, who's a film minor, loved it. But I tried watching it. It's just so gory. I couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, this is pretty gory too, but it's handled in kind of a funny way. That's like the guy, one of the vampires. He's they don't age, so he's like, he was this like 18th century dandy, and he's all dressed all frilly and everything. And after he bites this woman, and he accidentally hits her jugular vein, so blood is going everywhere. And he's all about keeping the apartment they live in clean and everything. So he's put out newspaper under the couch and everything, and it's just going everywhere. And then he talks to the camera because it's like this fake documentary, and he says, "Well, that did not go as I planned." And he said, "But you know, I think she had a good time."
You're a twisted man, there, Bill. Blood's flying everywhere. You're sitting here giggling. That's pretty funny.
It's good. I'm serious. I go see it.
Bill, I have a tradition. Our family's tradition. I know I'm talking a long way out, but we see a movie every Christmas Day after everybody gathers dinner at our house and everybody leaves. The two families go out and see a movie. What movie should we see this Christmas Day?
Ooh, boy. I don't know. I just got past the Oscars.
Sorry.
I know that neither of us are always in the office, but I suspect we'll run into each other again before.
All right, I'll ask you sometime in August or September.
Christmas.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I thought you might have known just a couple big Christmas releases.
I can tell you, I'm looking right now, and I'm looking at last year. I don't know. What did you see?
Well, I don't
know. You must have seen Into the Woods. You like musicals, right?
Yeah. We've seen Star. We're Star Trek fans. We've seen just what True Grit we saw on Christmas.
There's a remake of Point Break, and there's a movie.
No, we will not be seeing that.
How about this? A movie called Dirty Grandpa.
I've probably seen that either.
That just sounds like a family must.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, well, I'll ask you in September. How's that?
Yeah, I think I'll have it nailed down a little bit more by then.
Bill, let me ask you about the Lazarus effect, because I'm looking at the description. A group of medical students discover a way to bring dead patients back to life, and it sounds a lot like Flatliners to me, which a movie I many years ago enjoyed.
It's bad. It's terrible. I mean, yeah, the Flatliners, I thought Flatliners was okay, but yeah. Flatliners is one of those movies like this that had a big name cast, and they just kind of got wasted. Here, this movie's pretty terrible. And Mark Duplass, who makes really good movies and is in a lot of movies, he's in it. Olivia Wilde, who is also in a lot, kind of indie things, but is really good. She's in it. They're just wasted. The whole thing, they're trying to, bring back dead animals and all this stuff. And they eventually they're going to have to do it to a human, of course. I mean, you kind of know where it leads. It's nothing you haven't seen before.
All right. Last question for me. It's not a movie question, but you do a lot of media stuff. Do you watch House of Cards on Netflix, and have you watched season 3?
I don't.
Okay.
I just don't have time to watch TV anymore, but my TV critic buddies, they all kind of like it.
Do they like season 3?
They haven't. They only seen some of it.
Okay.
But I think everybody, generally speaking, kind of likes Spacey, but he's very over the top, right?
Yeah, it's very Shakespearean.
Yeah, I do. I know that he does a Southern accent, and as somebody who actually has a Southern accent, I always kind of hate the fake one.
Bill, is there any movie that's people are really, people in your field are really anticipating opening coming up here down the road?
You know, it sounds more lowbrow than it should, but I think that one thing that everybody's kind of got their eye on this summer is the second Avengers movie.
I'm sorry, the what?
The second Avengers movie.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because, the first one ended up being, the second or third biggest movie of all time, and it was really good because Joss Whedon, who was Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all this, and he directed it and wrote it, and I think he really kind of made it cool. It was better than just a superhero movie would be. The one thing that gives me pause is that Tom Hiddleston, who plays Loki, is not in this one. And, I thought he was the best thing, but I love that guy.
Great villain.
I think the character is great. And he'll be back in some other ones, but he's not going to be in this. It's like, what? But if there's anybody that can pull that kind of thing off and mess around with your expectations, I think it's Whedon. So.
He's my son's favorite writer, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And what was the sci-fi he did?
Where they're on the ship. And
yeah,
it
was like, it was one season, Firefly, yeah.
That's it, Firefly.
Loved it. Loved that whole series.
I've met Whedon a few times at the TV tour that we used to go to when I was a TV critic. And one time he showed up at a party for the WB network back then with both hands in bandages. And it's like, what? All wrapped up. I'm like, what is going on? And he said, nobody's going to believe this, but it really is true. He said he was on vacation somewhere with his wife, and they made ceviche on the beach. And he got lime juice all over his hands and never washed it off, and then got sunburned. And so he said, and it's like we all debated, like, is that real? Did he really do that?
It's not quite an old war or football injury, is it?
It's pretty bizarre.
That is bizarre.
Thanks, Bill.
Well, that's Bill Goodykoontz. Check out his reviews, also his interviews. He does a great job in our paper, Arizona Republic, and, of course, AZ Central Sports. Bill Goodykoontz, thanks for joining us. All right, we will be back. Just shortly.
You're on the Christmas Brad movie recommendations.
Oh, anything that Vince Vaughn is in, I will see in a Christmas
movie. He's terrible.
Oh, get it. Oh, God.
He can't act. His movies stink.
That's all I have to say about Joe. That. I'm Paula Bovin. We're filling in for Brad Sesmet, and we'll be back.
Please.